Absolutely insane, as if it was like Ebola. We should have taken 20 years longer than the normal time because this is new. Multiply injected people have a high frequency of getting COVID. It takes that long for really important reasons. You cannot rush this. It's malfeasant for them to perpetuate a message that myocarditis in a child is mild and transient, because it's not. You have a ticking time bomb. Whatever the thing they're injecting stays at the injection site or the local draining lymph node. Both of those are lies. They weren't just wrong, they were lying. The reaction is an autoimmune reaction. It's the body attacking itself. Increases in the rates of spontaneous abortion reports, miscarriages, stillbirths, babies aged 0 through 23 months, reported having a severe adverse event in their trials. No child should die from a medical intervention that's meant to promote health. Imagine a 10-month-old has a febrile convulsion, a seizure, okay? If your parents saw that, do you think they would still do it? Every system you can think of going wrong is being affected here. It's every age group. It bioaccumulates in the ovaries, in the testes, in the spleen, in the liver, in the adrenals, in the brain. It goes everywhere. Messenger RNA does something called reverse transcription, which we were also told would never happen. It happens, is that it goes back to its DNA state. It's an experiment. It ends in 2024, and they keep pushing the date back because they keep lowering the age group. Like, do no harm. They're not just words. How can you look at your kid and say, I did squat? They're there to profit. They're not there to make people healthy. And we're not going to be able to hide the bodies for much longer because there's too many. And that's the truth.
From the beginning of this COVID madness, and even today, when it seemed that the human race, or at least part of it, had lost its mind and gave up critical thinking altogether, one of the main arguments against people like me talking and speaking out about medical issues is the claim that I'm not a doctor nor a scientist, and therefore I'm not qualified to speak about these subjects, no matter how many proofs, published articles, and medical testimonies I've shown. The fact that non-medical personnel had to speak out was because the mainstream media will not. They are backed by the crooks and criminals running our countries these days that have stopped taking care of people and are acting on behalf of pharma companies and against the public's greater good. The person I'm interviewing today is a scientist, a very good one. Amongst her many impressive titles is the title Viral Immunologist. She's the number one expert in the world right now in analyzing the vaccine adverse event reporting system, VAERS, that is under the control of the CDC. At the end, the knowledge and the information she brings us is all about the victims. Victims of crimes against humanity, victims of corruption, of greed, of a medical community that is partially paralyzed as doctors and scientists worldwide are too scared to speak out, scared to lose their jobs, and are being bullied by corrupt governments which are being controlled by mega corporations. Dr. Rose has been speaking out from day one, pointing to the facts and numbers and proving that what was once science that heard a variety of voices and made informed and responsible decisions had turned into pseudoscience that is censoring and bullying anyone who dares to go against the narrative, and she's not the only one. This video is not short. It has almost no graphics, no fast editing or gimmicks. Nothing except a top expert in her field letting us know and hear a different voice. A voice and information that the mainstream media will never let us hear, nor YouTube and social media, which are censoring everything and are a part of this gang of thugs. She is unbiased, not connected to any company, completely independent, and her information is clean as far as interests. If any, she and many others are risking their careers by speaking out. Your job as an audience is to share this information, share this video, download it wherever you can, and upload it independently. We are morally obligated to share this with our families, friends, and co-workers, to help our fellow human beings who are conned, duped, bullied, who lost their freedom of choice and the freedom of information and expression. We owe it to our kids, to their future, because this, was just the beginning. Thank you. Here we go.
Hello, Dr. Jessica Rowe. Thank you for being with me here today. We've known each other for the past year or so. Yeah, something like that. It's the first time we meet, though, face to face. So it's really nice.
Nice to be here. Nice to meet you in a very nice environment. Thanks.
Thank you. So we spoke, we had a Zoom conversation or something like that. The one thing I remember from the conversation is that after speaking with you, I couldn't sleep that night.
Great.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I have that effect on people. Yeah.
Well, I knew something was going on. And for me, a lot of things that I've seen were wrong as far as the picture. Something with that picture was wrong. But after speaking with you and hearing about the vaccine and what you know about it, I realized that something way worse is going on than I thought. Mm-hmm. This week, the Israeli Ministry of Health just recommended injecting 6-month-old babies and up. So injecting babies, which is quite terrifying for me, I guess for you too. I think people are bombarded with information and they just don't know what to believe anymore. And especially bombarded by TV and the media, and there's a lot going on. And I think if someone like you can maybe simplify some of the things that you know. So your official title is viral immunologist?
I have no idea. Okay. I literally come from 5 different fields. Now I am an adverse event reporting data analyst, I suppose.
And that's not the thing you did before.
That's a new thing
that you just
did. Everything about this for me is new. Like I was, you know, I am vaccinated against things that most people haven't heard of. Very pro-vaccine, I was.
And that's important to say, because we're gonna go through the differences between those vaccines that you're talking about and what's being.
Now.
It's really important to know that about you, that you are very pro-vaccine.
I'm very pro-science. I'm very cynical. I'm very critical. I'm very skeptical. I'm people. They have strange impressions of me because, you know, I wear floopy clothes and I surf. I would not do anything other than surf if I had a choice. And, I'm a vegan sometimes. Anyway, but I'm very, very hardcore, serious person. And I come from a very methodical place. And it's kind of a beautiful mixed blessing because this whole thing has made me even more serious about being meticulous about detail and methodology, because you can't make a mistake now if you're even questioning the so-called narrative. It's very strange because science is questioning, but we're not really allowed to do that anymore. So it puts us in a very strange position. So I'm pretty hardcore about the science.
I thought about it that before 2020, I've never questioned anything regarding health. I never questioned. Not what the Ministry of Health recommends. For me, science was this one thing. You just say amen, you do everything they tell you. And all of a sudden, all of that changed for me too, as you know.
The worst part is it makes you wonder about the stuff from before.
Before, yeah.
That's the thing I think that's creating a really strong cognitive dissonance in a lot of the science community, because it's too hard for them to even, or even just anyone in the masses, it's too hard to consider that all of this stuff might have been a farce. Because you have to consider that if you consider that this is.
Of course.
Yeah.
If you consider that it's not just one thing that just happened 2 years ago, that everything changed and flipped, it has to be based on stuff that happened before,
mm-hmm.
and then you need to figure out what's right, what's wrong, what's truth, what are facts. That's fact should be very straight on. So let's move on to the coronavirus. First of all, can you tell me, or them, both of us, what is coronavirus? I mean, how is it different, if any, different from other similar viruses that we've seen in the past? I guess SARS, the...
Mm-hmm. So the current coronavirus that we're all well familiar with by now is it's called the SARS-CoV-2 because it's the second version of the SARS-CoV, which we encountered a couple decades ago, I guess now. It's a cold virus. I don't want people to get confused by that because it's just there's a family of viruses called coronaviruses. Cold viruses that we normally get like seasonally are in that family. So it's called a coronavirus because corona in Latin means crown, and it has this crown of spikes on its surface. And these are the mode that it uses to attach to certain receptors on cells in whatever species they're going to propagate in and infect the cells. So that's where the name comes from. And this one is different because, primarily because of the differences in the spike itself. There are some amino acid mutations. There are differences in the, let's say the minor differences in the structure, the conformation of the spike, which makes this distinct from the first version. And there are some strange things about it. There are things about this spike protein in the SARS-CoV-2 that are clear and present evidence that it could not have evolved in nature. Something called the furin cleavage site, which some people might have heard of. This is found in SARS-CoV-2 on the RBD of the spike protein. It's not found in the first version. And this is a very special place on the spike itself, where when it's cleaved, there's a site, furin cleavage site. When it's cleaved, the spike protein splits into two pieces. And the second piece, which is still attached to the virus, that's the part that it uses to poke a hole in the cell and gain entry. So something that necessarily has to happen with the furin cleavage site is it needs to be, an enzyme has to act on it. So this enzyme is found on many human cells, for example. So there's this system of infectivity that is present on this version of the virus that wasn't there before, and it makes it much more infectious to cells. Okay. So that's all I have to say on that for now.
But that's kind of a red flag as far as something.
It's a huge red flag to somebody who knows what, like when you look at that as a molecular biologist, you're like, that doesn't look right.
Is it, for your knowledge, more deadly than recent SARS?
No, it's I mean, we've all seen this the evolution of the versions. We had beta, delta, alpha. We have Omicron now, which is like diverged. Omicron spike is completely different from the delta spike. It has like 30 different mutations, which makes it less. Dangerous.
Yeah, and more, and more infective, right?
It's different the way that the infectivity occurs. This isn't really something you should refer to as a deadly pathogen by any scope of the definition. It's not close to something like Ebola, but yet it seems like the world went absolutely insane as if it was like Ebola. When you study pathogenic viruses, the kind that that can be bad for you if you catch it, and your immune system maybe isn't optimally charged, and you hear the word zoonotic pathogen, you get scared.
Yeah.
If you understand what that means, you know, because if just for the people who might not know, a zoonotic pathogen is one that jumps from one species to another, which pretty much necessarily means that you won't have immunity to that virus because your immune system won't have seen it before, recognized it. It's from a different being, type of being. So basically it means that you can't fight it. So it can be very, very, very dangerous. That's why I said within 2 weeks, I was like, nah, there's no signs that this is that at all.
So that's the first first thing that came to mind that something is wrong with this picture
yeah.
that they're portraying.
There was such a mismatch between what I know, because I know this stuff, and I even know how to prepare for imminent danger pertaining to this, and what I was seeing. The main thing being in Israel while that happened was the presence of the militants, like the enforcement of the rules pertaining to how this affected each and every person mentally and physically. The fact that they were imposing restrictions on your ability to get sunshine and exercise and go to the sea and try to maintain some kind of routine in the face of all of this, yes. that really, really didn't make any sense to me. Really, not it. It that really was the thing that
you didn't
that,
relate it to just hysterical reaction by the government and by the people.
No, because I didn't sense any hysteria from them.
Something more organized and
very organized.
Okay,
very and a lot of rage and that kind of evolved with time. I'm not sure if you remember in Tel Aviv, for people who don't know who are watching this, there was a time when we weren't allowed to surf. We weren't allowed to go to the sea, and they had helicopters.
Yeah, I remember.
Police helicopters in the air aimed at surfers. And that was in the air. They also had boats, and they had jet skis, and they had land soldiers.
Yeah, that's just insane.
It was insane. Overkill.
People were sitting completely alone in the forest, and police came. She's just drinking coffee.
It ain't about pathogen. Come on. If you were concerned about a pathogen, you would be abiding by sensible rules. You would be aware if that person had symptoms, first of all. Like if somebody is symptomatic, like sneezing and coughing, you're probably going to want to stay away from them.
Right.
But it wasn't in the equation at all. It was, I'm the aggressor. I've been told to do this to you and I'm going to do it. And if you resist, you're going to get hurt.
Yeah. And completely healthy people.
It had nothing to do with that. Nothing. Okay. And it became very clear very quickly to me. And so again, maybe it was a mixed blessing that I was here and it was like really hardcore.
Yeah.
But
it also happened all of a sudden. That's all. One thing I also remember about that, it just happened right from like zero to 60, as you say.
Yeah.
Right. And you try to figure out why is it happening and you don't get a sensible
answer.
Because there isn't one.
They're told what to do. They're under instructions to enforce these rules, and that's what they do.
I want to know if you can explain to me, and I know you can, what is the mRNA? What is that technology? A little bit about the history with trying to develop vaccines with this technology prior to COVID-19. And how is it different from what we know as regular vaccines? So just about the technology itself and, you know, before we even go to the VAERS and...
Yeah, so you said it right, correctly. A lot of people might have heard that these products, the COVID-19 injectable products, are not vaccines. And that's not an incorrect statement for many reasons. From the point of view of the time that it takes to develop a vaccine, a conventional vaccine, which is based on proteins from a virus that are attenuated and they're carried in a vector, for example. That's a conventional type of virus. Introduction of proteins from a virus to mount an immune response injected in some kind of carrier. That takes between 5 and 15 years. It takes that long for really important reasons. And it's a sequence of steps that you need to follow that has been carefully designed over decades by the biologics people, by the FDA, by all of the smart, important people who know the importance of making sure that you don't mix this kind of thing up, that you don't make a mistake, because it can be disastrous, as everyone can understand. So that's the part that I think most people really need to understand, that you cannot rush this. Just like you can't rush pregnancy, for example. It takes 9 months. You can't change that. I know this isn't pregnancy, but it's the same idea. You can't rush it. It takes this long, and it has to be done in this sequence of steps. You can't overlap the steps. You have to follow the sequence. They didn't do that.
Okay, and what is, can you explain what is mRNA?
Right, so instead of this being an attenuated virus, for example, this is a completely different technology, and it is a technology, and it's delivered in another completely novel technology. So there are two completely novel aspects to this. So the mRNA means messenger RNA. Messenger RNA is something that we all have. We have DNA. We are DNA beings, and that gets converted to messenger RNA, which gets converted to proteins. So this is just normal. Some people call this the central tenet of biology. So mRNA is not a foreign thing in and of itself. It's the use of the mRNA that is novel. So what they've done is, instead of having a protein from a virus as the immune instigator, they have this template for the spike protein from the SARS-CoV-2 virus, which gets translated, once injected into the human by the human host cells over and over and over in copious amounts, to the spike protein. And so it's a hijacking of the gorgeousness of the human in order to mass produce the protein from the inside. So it's a completely new thing. And this is where taking the years, we should have taken 20 years longer than the normal time, because this is new, okay, to find out generationally, like how this might go wrong. Because if this goes wrong, it could be disastrous. So it was rushed. Operation Warp Speed happened, and this was from concept to arm in the context of viruses now in less than 2 years. The phase 1 and 2, 3 steps were overlapped, and the animal trials were done simultaneously. It's not good enough. It's just not. Like, hand to heart, it's not good enough. So the other thing about this that most people aren't talking about that much are the carrier lipids. So mRNA, theoretically, maybe not in this context, is very fragile. So you need to make sure that it gets where it's going so that it can be translated. And so in order to do that, you wrap it, they've wrapped it in what we call a lipid nanoparticle. And Pfizer and Moderna both have their own recipes. It's a combination of 4 different types of lipids, one of which is PEG, which is allergenic, and it causes anaphylactic shock in a lot of people. And another of which is called cationic lipid, which is highly toxic, and this is not a secret. There are many, many, many peer-reviewed articles describing how toxic to human cells cationic lipids are. And so both of these contain in the recipe, in certain concentrations, these fats, these lipids, in this lipid nanoparticle that is the home of the mRNA. So 2 brand new things. Safety and efficacy data is lamentable, and we're seeing that coming about, as we're going to talk about soon, which is kind of the evidence that we should have had way before we injected over 6 billion people, or however many people have taken a dose, in my opinion. Because it appears as though there's a lot of bad stuff happening in terms of things that we can talk about soon.
But I think some of the argument that they're the narrative of the government, the Ministry of Health are saying that is that they had to rush it because there was an emergency, according to them, emergency state.
Do you believe that?
I do not believe that. I want to add something. I think it's not related. Well, it is related, but I think many of the deaths are not from Corona, but with Corona, and we have evidence of that. They took people out of car accidents, you know, people who drowned at sea. I have a friend who is a nurse. She works in one of the big hospitals. She told me about a 75-year-old man who drowned in the sea, was in and out of it a couple of days, and he was tested positive in this weird test, the PCR test, which is half of the time unreliable. And he was tested 95. Okay.
False positive rate, yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. People were tested positive for COVID, and then he died from drowning. And he was declared, as many other people, dead from Corona. So I think, yeah, I think many of the deaths aren't from Corona. So I guess the situation
that's been verified. Okay. They've gone back over the death certificates. And so there's a list of things that, you know, this happened, this happened, this happened. And the first one is the cause of death. So they've reassigned, after going back over these death records, the top one being COVID-19, to the actual cause of death.
They did, though? They fixed it? Oh, where, in the States?
Yeah, they did it with kids in the States, and I believe they did it in Italy, but don't quote me on that yet. Okay.
So they did fix it a little bit now.
It's coming to light that there have been far fewer people who have died from COVID, but rather with COVID.
With COVID.
If you have someone declared dead from COVID, or if you get them on a vent, it's something like 50 grand per person that the hospital would get. Don't quote me on that, but it was a lot of money.
Where are the doctors that are in the middle of this whole thing? I'm not talking about people who got bribes. I'm talking about the regular, usually honest doctors.
Scared
for their job, scared for their, you know, livelihood.
The vibe everywhere. I mean, I haven't been out much since this whole thing happened, but I'm very tapped in.
Yeah.
And the vibe is just one of, you can't even have a discussion about this without being name-called or
anti-vaxxers.
Exactly. This whole nonsense with the lexicon. I'm like, what? Like, how is anyone calling me or Robert Malone an anti, like, do you even know what the words are coming out of your mouth?
No. So they heard it on TV.
Right. So there's this weird atmosphere, and it's very pervasive.
But then I want to stand that, because for me at least, a doctor used to be something, you know, a little bit elevated than
used
the rest of us. Maybe used to be. But I'm thinking of a doctor who's in front of a person who just died. He knows for certain he did not die from COVID. He writes COVID as the cause of death. How does he sleep? Yeah.
Don't know.
And
it's a question of our time. I don't know.
First of all, I know personally doctors who were kind of threatened by the establishment once they talked against the narrative, against the vaccine.
It's funded by pharma. You can't say anything against
it. And also, I think you see it everywhere. They're everywhere, in the studies, in the...
They got their dirty hands in everything, and that's...
Conferences and flights.
The system from the inside is becoming corrupt because of the business model of these companies. And it really is just that simple.
Yeah.
They're there to profit. They're not there to make people healthy. And unfortunately, the medical establishment is just... It's the lapdog of these money-making companies. That's it.
I want to move on to VAERS. VAERS is a vaccine adverse event reporting system. That's the official title. You are known as the expert, but you just, you know, in the past 2 years, you've done it, right? So before we even go to the data that came, and that's the most important thing here, is what's going on with this vaccine? What is it actually doing?
It's not a vaccine.
Sorry, the injection. You're right.
I never call it that.
Me also. We're going to use the injection from now. So I want to know, first of all, what it is. What is VAERS? Why is it there from the get-go? Who controls it? And what can be the potentially problems with VAERS, as how reliable is it and who is reporting? I mean, everything you know, just...
All right, so I'll tell you why I know about it, first of all. Because my plans were shifted, I needed to find something to do, so I decided to teach myself a statistical programming language called R. And as you probably know, the best way to teach yourself how to use a new tool is to have some, you know, stuff lying around that you can use the tool with. So I chose the VAERS database. It's the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System of the United States, because I saw what was going on, and I thought, you know what? That database is probably going to become real interesting real soon. Okay. And I wasn't wrong. So that's what got me into this. And yeah, you're right. Apparently, I'm now the go-to person, which is nice. I appreciate that. But basically, VAERS has been on the go since 1990. It was it's the brainchild of the FDA and the CDC, and it's a pharmacovigilance tool, which is designed to detect safety signals that weren't detected in pre-market testing. So the normal 5 to 15 years testing for the biological product goes on. You get your, you know, new DTaP vaccine or whatever, and then you monitor what's going on in the public at following administration with these data sets. So it's been used for 30 years. It is antiquated. The worst problem with it is the underreporting, which means that only a certain percentage of people who actually suffer an adverse event will actually report one. So there have been estimates from like it's 100 times underreported to like 31 times.
Who usually reports? Is it doctors or regular people, or what's the percentage between
It changes for product, but for the COVID-19 products, a very bright friend of mine wrote a paper on this and found that it was close to 70% medical professionals.
Okay.
So a lot of people who have heard about VAERS may have heard it used in a derogatory way, so-called dumpster, which I find absolutely ridiculous because it's a government database. It is under the control of the FDA and the CDC, and it represents people who've been injured, whose doctors have, most of the time, their doctors have filed this report, which takes at least 30 minutes.
So each report at least take 30 minutes?
At least online. It's like a multiple online form. It's horrible because if you don't fill it out in time, imagine you're an older person too and your doctor's too busy to do it and you have to do it. And if you don't do each sheet, you know, e-sheet on time, it boots you off. You got to start again.
Okay.
It's really annoying.
And that's a system to prevent misuse of the information.
If you file a fake VAERS report, you go to prison.
Okay, that's important.
Yeah.
It's not just anyone can do whatever you want.
If you try to fool the U.S. government, you will get put in prison.
How about doctors who don't file?
This is a huge problem. And this is why. Imagine you're an ER doctor, an ICU doctor, and you just completed a 14-hour shift. And there are a lot of people showing up in the ICU and the ER these days, my friend.
Yeah.
Well, nobody knows why.
Yeah. No relation to the...
No idea. SIDS or SADS or... Oh, God. Don't get me started. So, you've completed this long shift. You're agonizingly tired. And you know, because you had 10 people come in with cardiac event, young people, who just got their shot 2 days ago, you know that it was because, or you suspect, and it's written in the CDC and the FDA contract or whatever it's called, the document, you are entitled by law to file a report, even if you're not sure that it's caused by it. If you suspect an adverse event related to a product, you have to report it.
Okay.
So you have 10 of these. You take a half an hour to file. You just completed your 14-hour shift. Are you going to do them all?
That's the underreporting right there.
It's one of the reasons. Yeah. You have the intimidation because in addition to the fact that, you know, Walensky is promoting the reporting of adverse events, there's the incentivization to do so because of this weird environment in the hospitals. You can't even talk about it. You can't suggest that this
something
could
is
have
related
been because, it's weird. It's
but
like,
underreporting is not from COVID. It started before COVID.
Absolutely.
And, okay.
Yeah. But so it's different for COVID. And I dare say it's there's less underreporting in the context of COVID. So I've calculated this using the Pfizer severe adverse event data rate to be 31, but it's just an estimate. So any
you talked about 100 before, so it can go right all the way to the...
Yeah, so that was another study that was done for different products. I think it was the flu. Anyway, don't quote me, but yeah, I don't think it's that high. They have people whose job it is to find
those. To make sure that you don't... Yeah.
Yeah. And they... Yeah, there's a huge backlog right now. I wrote a paper about this. I published it last year. Huge. Like, okay. There are probably... I really am not exaggerating here. There are probably millions of reports that have been backlogged. Wow. So in the VAERS system right now, there's two data sets that you can download if you're willing to analyze them. There's the domestic data, which represents the reports made within the United States.
Okay.
And there's the foreign data, mm-hmm. which represents, I don't know, question mark. But there's still reports filed by probably American citizens who are abroad, maybe some other people, into the VAERS system. So they're still valid. And they're still in the context of these products. So there are, I'm trying to look into my memory here, there are over 1.2 million reports just in the context of the Moderna, the Pfizer, and the Janssen products in VAERS right now. And in the domestic set, there's something like 840,000. So you have to multiply that by 31.
Unbelievable.
Okay, and it might be higher than that. We don't even have to talk about deaths. Okay, but I want to follow my thought.
Okay,
the last 30 years of data, if you collect all of the adverse event reports per year for all the products, all the vaccines combined, you get about 39,000 reports per year on average for the last 30 years.
Okay,
that's
combined all the whole 30
all the vaccines
years.
For each year, you get about 39,000 reports, okay. And of those, probably about 150 deaths. So it's been pretty normal for the last 30 years.
All vaccines combined.
All vaccines combined. And there's a lot on those childhood schedules right now. You go to 2021. And if you plot all the adverse events only in the context of three products, not all, you take out all the other vaccines, you get this over 10,000% increase. It looks like bungalows and a skyscraper. That's the plot that I'm calling it. You don't need statistics to know that there's something terribly anomalous about this. Not only that, but the range of adverse events being reported, it's not comparable.
Can you talk about death?
The total number of deaths reported to VAERS without the underreporting factor now is something like 15,000. So you compare that.
US only?
Yeah.
U.S. Exactly. only, not considering the other underreporting.
So I'm not sure what the underreporting, exactly. I'm not sure what it is for death, but you'll have to multiply that by
so
something.
So we're jumping from 150 to 15,000 and way more.
Times something.
Oh, wow.
So.
One question about those. I remember there was a thing. One of the factors that you mentioned is how long does it take usually for the death to occur after the injection? And also, what's the difference between probably there is the first, the second, and the third as far as...
Yeah. So I published a paper on this about a year ago. And one of the things that I did was use one of the criteria in something called the Bradford Hill criteria, which is a way to assess, this is what the WHO is meant to be doing now, they're not. It's called a causality assessment. And there are 10 criteria that you should satisfy. I think you need to satisfy 5 in order to establish a very likely causation. So one of them is something called temporality. So of course, one thing has to come before the other in order for causation to be considered. And the shorter the time frame between those two, the more likely you have causation. Yeah. So I found more than 50% of the deaths had been reported on the same day. Within 24 hours, about 50% of the deaths were reported immediately, okay. Which is like, that's a weird thing to find. And it makes me wonder, maybe I should... What I ended up doing was I looked at more than death. I looked across any standalone adverse event I could, and it was exactly the same thing. In anaphylaxis, like anaphylaxis is an acute reaction to a trigger. So you would expect if there was you know, a causal effect, and you use this method and you plotted. So what I did was I plotted a two-dimensional plot where I subtracted the amount of time from the vax date to the onset date, and I plotted that against the percentage of the reports. So if you see a clustering around zero, you know, that means that, you know, this percentage of whatever's occurred here. So for anaphylaxis, you'd expect it to be almost 100, right? Because it's an acute reaction. So it was kind of like an internal positive control. So I'm finding as I'm going through this as the as time progresses that these percentages are either very stable or they're going up, which means and you make a really good point about dose, because it's really important to separate it out, and I haven't done that recently, except for myocarditis. So myocarditis is a diagnosis for inflammation of the myocardium of the heart. So the heart is a big muscly thing, and it has a pericardium, which is the outside layer, and endocardium, which is the inside layer of the atria, and the myocardium, which is the muscly layer in between, that allows the heart to be like flexible and beaty. And so myocarditis is when there's inflammation associated with the muscly part. It's very rare in children. And if you take out all the myocarditis reports, just in the domestic data, you can leave out all of the foreign data. You can see it very clearly. It's about 5,500 reports now. And you plot all these reports against age, like you stratify by age. You'll see that most of the reports are made in 15-year-old boys, children, following dose two. So this is another Bradford Hill criteria satisfied. It's called dose response. If there was nothing happening that was different between the doses, you wouldn't see that big difference. It's a five-fold difference in reporting. Something very, very distinct is going on here. And 15-year-old boy, I mean, anyway, it's a strange thing. It needs to be addressed. It has been addressed by the CDC. It's one of the only adverse events that they've talked about.
In Israel, too. That's the only thing they talked about.
But they sugarcoated. They called it mild and transient, and it is neither of those two things. It's very, very obnoxious. No, it's not obnoxious. It's malfeasant for them to perpetuate a message that myocarditis in a child is mild and transient, because it's not. You have a ticking time bomb, basically, once you've succumbed to a myocarditis type injury as a child.
Why is it doing it then? The mRNA. Why do you think? I mean,
the idea now is that the spike protein is embedded in the myocardium itself and causing the reaction is an autoimmune reaction. Okay. So it's the body attacking itself. Because it sees the spike and it's like embedded in the cells and it's, oh, okay, we have to get rid of that, which is causing this massive inflammation. It's about 5,000 different types of adverse event reports up until 2021. Now we have over 14,000 MedraCodes. So MedraCode is the name or the number associated with what is written down as being the problem, the adverse event, the side effect. Mm-hmm. There are only 25,000 or so preferred term codes that we call them. So we're using 14,000 of
those.
So, I mean, this problem that some people, a proportion of the human population who've been injected are having, are so systemic. The only thing that I've been able to figure out that links this is the immunological component. It has to be, because the foundational problem is the inflammation in my eyes. I've suspected that for a long time, but it's still so bizarre because it's like not everyone is succumbing. Not everyone is succumbing to the same degree. We have this long COVID, so-called, which I'm deciphering right now. And
what can you tell me about that? Is it the thing?
Inflammation.
Inflammation. It's like shingles?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, okay. Well,
we're hearing a lot about that.
So. Yeah, so that's a reactivation of a latent virus. And when I hear that, like my training says immune compromised. Because the mechanisms of action within your immune system that were keeping these viruses latent, asleep, you know, at bay, are not doing their job anymore. So something's been disrupted. I've been calling it a dysfunction. And that's why you're seeing Epstein-Barr out the yin-yang, herpes zoster virus, which causes shingles in adulthood, cancers.
Cancers.
You know?
Coming from remission.
Yeah.
What about the I heard a lot about the uterus and everything related to women's reproductive issues.
That's another 3 hours.
Yeah.
So let me tell you something about why these things are absolutely novel and why the time span of the safety and efficacy testing was too short and why data was not revealed to us. Byron Bridle is a viral immunologist from Canada, good friend of mine now. He lives in Guelph, very serious guy, has his own lab, been one for 30 years, something like that. And he FOIA requested, Freedom of Information requested, a study from Japan that showed that the biodistribution of the lipid nanoparticles was not limited to the injection site. Now, everybody has probably heard over and over again that the whatever the thing they're injecting stays at the injection site or the local draining lymph node, right? Yeah. That's actually what we were told.
Yeah, and I heard disappears
quickly.
Yes. Yeah. Doesn't stay in the body,
exactly.
Does its job and
that's
fades
what we were
away.
Told, and both of those are lies. They're not just, they weren't just wrong, they were lying because the data existed. And it was not transparently shown to the public.
So it's not a pill?
No.
A pill as a half-life.
That's
as
right.
A, yeah, an injection is a different
thing?
No,
this is different. This is different. And I'll tell you why it's different for another horror reason in a second. So this study showed, without a shadow of a doubt, that these lipid nanoparticles, which again are the carriers of the payload, which is the messenger RNA, which is... We don't know because they won't reveal the sequences, which is also very questionable. What are they? What are they encoding? We don't know.
Just stop you. Do you ask Pfizer for
yes.
to see those?
Immediately. Those... I have the email.
What did they answer you?
Didn't answer me. Of course they didn't answer me. I wrote to Moderna and Pfizer. I said, listen, you give me a sample of your sequence and you give me a sample of your product. I'll run it through mass spec and I'll consider taking your product and promoting it.
And promoting it.
No, of course you're not going to hear anything. Anyway, so the horror story about this is that it not only biodistributes, which means that it carries its payload to places that it's not meant to in the human body, but it bioaccumulates in the ovaries, in the testes, in the spleen, in the liver, in the adrenals, in the brain.
Oh my God.
It goes everywhere.
And that's the study you just mentioned from Japan.
And... Pfizer, as you know, has been under court order to release their documents, their safety documents. And within their safety documents is a document very similar to this study done in Japan. Shows exactly the same thing in Wistar rats. Exactly the same thing.
So there's one thing I don't get. This Vera system is a CDC FDA child. They're in control of it. They see all this data coming, the data that you analyze and you talk about here. How are they ignoring it? It's their own data.
The only thing I can tell you about that, because I can't speculate on weird things and things I don't know. There was a Senate committee hearing with Anthony Fauci and Rochelle Walensky. And they were both directly asked, simple question, by one of the senators, how many deaths are there in VAERS right now? It was as simple as you can get. Rochelle Walensky is the director of the CDC, and everyone knows who Fauci is, right? These two people, if anyone, should know the answer to this question. I made a Substack about this because it was hilarious what happened. Not only did we not get a straight answer, But both of them started beating around the bush, and both of them separately talked about getting hit by cars when you leave buildings. Please don't ask me to elaborate, because it's just too weird. Yeah, read my Substack. It's so bizarro world. I have
that
the video.
That was their answer that they started?
Bizarro world. And I've been telling everyone, listen, she's the director of the CDC. She has an extremely important job right now. And a much more professional answer would have been, there are this many. At the time, there were about 11,000 in the domestic data set. And we are currently assessing what percentage of these were actually caused by the products. We don't know the answer to that at this time. They would have evaded, they would have, you know, ducked, you know, the landmine, or, you know, sidestepped the landmine. And they would have given an intelligent, truthful, and professional response. But we didn't even get that. It's appalling. It's really, really appalling.
Unbelievable.
So I can't tell you why, because it's, what I can tell you is that we're not going to be able to hide the bodies for much longer, because there's too many. And that's the truth.
Pregnancy, we haven't spoken about. We talked about the...
So yeah. The thing about the biodistribution of the messenger RNA is once it lands in the ovaries and accumulates, it's going to do what it's designed to do, which is to dump its payload, which is the very stable mRNA, by the way. We can talk about that. It's engineered to be very stable. And it's going to start producing, using the host cell machinery, the ribosomes, the protein. So let's assume it's the spike protein. Okay. And it starts mass producing the spike protein. What effect is that going to have on the ovaries? Do you know? I don't know. Do they know? Nope.
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. The way we're going to find out is, as Eric Rubin said, put it into people and we'll find out how safe it is that way.
Yeah, I remember that. That's the
mentality. Let's figure out if it's safe. We'll put it into everyone, and whoever does okay, the rest of you go
screw
yourself. So
for them, it's functioning as human test tubes.
Yes.
It's
an experiment. It ends in 2024, and they keep pushing the date back because they keep lowering the age group. So one more thing I want to say about the fertility issues. There's a paper that was published that definitively showed, they did very good controls, that the messenger RNA does something called reverse transcription, which we were also told definitively would never happen. It can't happen. It happens. They showed it. And what that means is that it goes back to its DNA state. And it does this uses a retrotransposon called line one. Now, I'm not a fertility expert and I don't know about babies and stuff, but what I do know is that line one is implicated in embryogenesis. And if it has any kind of like alteration in expression, lower or higher, during the embryogenetic process, then that will mess up the embryogenetic process. And that would equate, most likely, to a miscarriage or the loss of the embryo.
Well,
okay? So we know that this connection exists. And so there are all these question marks surrounding something as...
I remember they at the beginning, they told all pregnant women in Israel to go take the vaccine. It was safe. And a month later, I think they turned the decision into the only second trimester. What happened there?
So
why did they change
that? Because of the paper that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine that was definitive about the fact that this is safe for pregnant women. And when you change the denominator to what it should have been, it showed that about 82%. Now, there's still some work being and questioning about this paper. But basically what they showed, what I can say definitively, is that it was primarily the women in the first and second trimesters that were losing their babies, but it was a lot of them. So there's all this evidence. And in addition to that, it's not just VAERS. The uterus system, the yellow card system are showing the same thing. There are amazing increases in the rates of spontaneous abortion reports, miscarriages, stillbirths. And you're not hearing this just from data collection systems. You're hearing this from doulas, from people on the ground, from nurses.
Yes.
You're hearing it.
You're hearing it.
And when doctors speak out about this, I have two very good friends in Canada, Mel Bruchet and Daniel Negasse, who spoke out about this. They were informed by their colleagues, that there's like an 18% increase in stillbirths in this hospital. One of them was taken away in handcuffs. Literally, this happened.
Oh my God.
And put in a psychiatric hospital and forcefully medicated. And he had to get a team of people to get him out of that situation. He's an 82-year-old man. I think he's 82. It's appalling. It doesn't make any sense. It's not in line with anyone who's trying to convince me that they're interested in my health. And
it's
in
amazing.
The safety.
They have claim on the word truth and fact, and it has nothing to do with science anymore.
Yeah, they're real fast and loose with those words.
Yeah, I know. In Israel, too, by the way, I know doctors who were, you know, summoned to a committee and first being told, be careful, don't
talk.
It's
like summoning demons.
Yeah. Come on in.
Ouija board.
And they actually threaten doctors in ways that they, if you want to keep working as a doctor, stop criticizing
us. You know what I don't get? If somebody said, I mean, I'm not like most people, I suppose, but if somebody said that to me, I'd just put two fingers up in the air and I'd say, take your job and shove it.
You know, that's one of the things that really, I think about it a lot. What would I have done in the same place? So for me, and many of the people that I know, I think I would have, you know, told them to get lost. And by that, maybe losing my job and the thing that I worked. But that's the thing. It takes a certain person, I guess, to stand in front of this tsunami and say, I'm willing to risk my life, my livelihood, everything that I worked for.
What do you tell your kids? I mean, most people have kids, right? How can you look at your kid and say, I did squat when this was the shit was hitting the fan? How do you do that?
I don't know.
Right?
I think they look the other way because it's convenient and they think... They might be convincing themselves that it's okay.
If they thought about it, they'd understand that that was entirely false. There's no convenience here because we're all going to end up in the same shit boat.
Yeah. Everything we know about children who got the vaccine, according to VAERS, I mean, what's going on there?
Well, I will have
First
to talk
all,
about
are
the babies.
Children dying?
Yes. They are. Not at high rates, but no child should die from a medical intervention that's meant to promote health. Not one. That's the point that people seem to be forgetting. Oh, well, it's only a few. Oh, okay. What if it was yours?
Yeah. Just a few die and
collateral damage.
To save grandma and grandpa. That's the big thing in Israel. That's the slogan,
They're still saying that?
Well, right now, not so much, but you know, it used to be. The whole thing was about, you know.
Wear your mask. You're saving my grandma.
Yeah.
Really? Can you like, give me a logic gate chart? That shows the connection there?
There is none. There is none. But what do we know? Because I think children are now in the spot, especially the babies now in Israel that they started, they're recommending. I don't think, I think there won't be a compliance. You know, people
I don't think
won't
so
comply.
Either. The compliance rate for the young children is very low.
It's very low.
Yeah.
Everywhere?
Here, especially.
Yeah, I know here, but you know anything about
I don't know.
The
I don't know. The Americans seem to have jumped on that bandwagon pretty fast. Like it was November 4th that they allowed it to go into 5 to 11-year-olds, and there were like millions injected within a week.
Oh my God. So what's the information coming from VAERS?
So, you know, there are 55,000 reports in VAERS for children age 0 through 18 now, so multiply that by whatever you think is the underreporting factor. Yes, 140 have died within that age group.
With the underreporting,
without.
Remember that.
They voted unanimously 21-0 to put this into babies, which is in and of itself very strange. It's not statistically plausible. And this is a recurring theme, by the way. It's
right.
Always unanimous. I'll just say in the thousands,
okay.
Reports of adverse events in children age 0 through 5. Most of them were in the 5-year-olds, but there were reports in months old babies, many of them.
Mostly of, can you
2000. They were just under 1900. I just saw it in my mind.
Okay.
This isn't just dose one and dose two. There are ones that have dose three. Now, how is that possible?
Dose three with
dose three, 0 to 5 year olds.
When did they?
Exactly. So they're being injected when there's no EUA, which is bullshit anyway, authorization for this age group by medical professionals or whoever these people
are. Is that
are.
Legal?
No, I don't. Legal is a tricky word now,
well,
isn't it?
In their minds, in their
it's beyond unethical. Rules. It's beyond immoral.
That's of course.
I would call it illegal. No. It's preposterous because we don't have any safety data. And the safety data that was presented is so lamentable. It's a joke. 1 out of 71 for Pfizer, I believe, and 1 out of 82 for Moderna. I might have inverted those. Babies aged 0 through 23 months reported having a severe adverse event in their trials. Okay? Think about that. If a mom or a dad had a baby, you know, they were going into their pediatrician and they saw a little placard on the door outside that said, your baby has a 1 in 71 chance of suffering a severe adverse event, which could include febrile convulsion. Imagine a 10-month-old has a febrile convulsion, a seizure, okay? Yeah. How that's going to mess them up forever.
Of course.
You're still developing. You can barely hold up your head. If your parents saw that, do you think they would still do it?
Never.
Of course not.
All they hear is safe and effective.
Exactly.
That's the two words that...
Exactly. And there's nothing of the kind about these.
And children are not
They're not
sick.
Affected.
They're not affected They're by not this affected. Virus.
There's no need for this. It's insane.
And even if you take all of that in consideration and say, well, we're trying to prevent the spread, even that is not true. We know that for a year now. It doesn't prevent transmission. They're saying it.
Yes, the whole thing. It's preposterous.
So we're taking healthy children, risking them with
newborns.
Newborns.
And listen to this. Newborns. This is going to horrify you even more. I didn't know this until, you see, you learn so much when you look into this stuff. From the mother. I mean, the baby's taken out of the mother and immediately they're injected with Hep B. Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
I did not know that. I'm like, why? What is the justification? Why would a parent allow that? That's insane. So my point is that this newborn has been injected with other crap before they get their COVID crap. No studies on counterindications. We don't know anything about that.
How do they work together? Yeah.
No studies. Even if they had nothing else, even if they were fresh, clean, mama's milk, and then they got these shots, we still don't have enough data on that. And the data that we have is not good.
And this is for an illness that was, is.
Babies aren't affected.
Unaffected. 82, the average death age is 82, right? Yeah, that's 82 and preconditions and.
It's mind boggling. And I mean, just to add to the story, just in case people need evidence, you can look all this up. I have a Substack, I have a website, I reference everything heavily. Like I said, I've become very meticulous.
There was one question that came up here by Talia about what happened in the past with VAERS when you got data about stuff that's happening. I mean, people dying. Where was the cutoff? Where they said we're gonna take this thing out of circulation because that and many people died or were affected by it. So what happened before COVID and what's happening right now?
So historically. Like, first of all, in my opinion, I know a lot of people are kind of hard on VAERS, but I think it's a fully functioning pharmacovigilance tool as it stands, even with all of its flaws and everything that's not being done properly, it's still functioning.
That's what we have. I mean, there's nothing else monitoring.
Well, we have the VSD.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so...
One of the only ones that out there, you know.
It's probably one of the best, which doesn't say much, but historically, it's been very functional. I'll give you two examples. The previous cutoff number for the number of people who were allowed to die in the context of a biological was 50, 50. So it was this flu vaccine that came out a little while ago. I think 53 people might have died. Don't quote me on that, but it was around, it was hovering around 50. So they said, pull the product, too many people. Another example of how it's been functioning is in 1999, they put the rotavirus vaccine out. A handful of children were reporting intussusception, just a handful. Like, I don't know exactly how many, but somewhere between 15 and 20. They were doing the causality assessment. They saw the reports, they did the assessment, they determined it was very likely that this product was causing the intussusception. Okay. They pulled the product. Boom, boom, boom. That's how it's done.
15 to 20 and 50
deaths.
Death. And now?
What's the cutoff? There's no cutoff.
And now?
There's no cutoff.
We're getting no cutoff. 15,000 deaths, just keep on.
Deaths. And we're, that's not counting the 60,000 disabled people. That's not that counting the quarter of a million people who've been hospitalized. That's, I mean, we're talking about 14,000 different types of adverse events, which includes neurological, debilitation, cardiovascular, hepatological, every system you can think of going wrong is being affected here.
Unbelievable.
And it's every age group. It's not the just the elderly. Yes, more elderly people are suffering from death.
Yeah.
But this is
just the way the
very
world.
Uniform across all ages. No one seems to be immune in terms of age.
You know, there is the head of emergency unit in Dana Hospital in Tel Aviv, that it's a children's hospital, just, you know, a couple of months ago, said in the Knesset committee, the parliament committee, in his, you know, she said it in a video that a 16-year-old boy came, you know, and suffered acute heart failure. They resuscitated him. And she actually told, I know he was vaccinated. I know he had no precondition. And I don't count on the Ministry of Health to consider the connection between
the
two.
We don't have an adverse event reporting system here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is something, but I think it's very, just to cover their... You know.
But think of all the missing data, because that's recent if we have something at all, right?
But when you have doctors so high up saying that, and nobody even in that committee, you know, it was in the Knesset and all the people were influencing really important decisions, nobody just said anything about it, about what she just said. I have the video, just put it in one of my other videos. It's amazing. She actually says it, that she does not count on the Ministry of Health to do their job.
I have made a website called Jessica's Universe. I maintain the VAERS updated with numerical updates and also graphs. I do some analysis there. The VAERS data set is updated weekly. So every week we have new people to analyze.
I have a question.
Analyze.
Why do you think it's still up?
I have no idea. Every week I'm like, oh, I wonder if this is going to be the week.
Because, you know...
It doesn't make sense unless they're setting us up.
Maybe. Maybe, I don't know. Because censorship is a big thing now. I've been censored from Facebook,
YouTube,
Twitter. I've been fighting, you know, there's no way left.
I've been fact-checked. Have you been fact-checked?
Oh, definitely, of course.
Well, there you go.
By Reuters.
That's how you know. Yeah, exactly.
And they're
that's how you know you're on the target.
So my question is, how come VAERS is still up? I guess it's just a matter of time until they just drop it.
Listen, I think if they actually, like, tried to do that, they know that there would be, like... There'd be a lot of repercussions.
Okay, so they're just keeping it and ignoring the data that comes from there?
Well, it's a beautiful setup because they don't really need to do anything nefarious, which doesn't mean that they're not doing nefarious things with the data, but they don't need to. They have too few people vetting the data, getting the VAERS reports that are filed into the front-end system, assigned VAERS ID numbers. The backlog is huge, like I told you. There is data that goes missing. I wrote a paper on that too.
Average people that I speak to, people, you know, my family, friends, people who watch, unfortunately, watch TV, news, they're saying two things. Well, they're saying many things, but do you think that 90% of medical doctors in the world are wrong? And are they all trying to kill you? Are they all plotting to kill you?
No.
And of course, that's not true, but I want to address that issue. What's going on there? What happened?
They weren't paying attention when they swore the Hippocratic Oath, that's for sure, because they don't seem to understand what it means. Like, do no harm. They're not just words. You have to, if you're a medical professional and someone is coming to you for help, for healing, for anything, for assistance with an ongoing illness, whatever it may be, they have to be up to date with the literature, with all the information. They have to. It's their job. And they're getting paid a lot of money to do their job. They're not doing their job. And so I can't explain that.
The average doctor, you know, family doctor just tells you, just go get vaccinated. It's not a vaccine. Get the injections. They know nothing about
it. Nothing. I guarantee you they don't even know about the difference in the technology.
So the Ministry of Health...
Let alone how devastating it could be.
So the Ministry of Health just give them orders, you know, the protocol, and they're just to follow it with no question asked. So at that point, it's just every person with their own moral compass.
100%.
And they always can blame whoever sent them the protocol, so they can just clear themselves, let's say legally, not morally, but legally, from any accusation of...
Yeah, I've heard a bunch of my friends and colleagues say, start threatening the medical doctors with lawsuits. That's when you'll start to see some changes. Because if they're doing this because they're incentivized by money or losing their job out of fear, let's see how they react to being sued by someone whose daughter died. Huh? Seriously.
A famous Facebook post a while ago from the Ministry of Health, the Israeli Ministry of Health, they're saying, you know, there's a little myocarditis, nothing too much, just a few people, whatever. And they got, I think, anywhere between 20 to 25,000 comments in a night, in a single night, of people testifying about their own or close family members' issues. And
it's crazy, and hey? Every day I hear something. Every day.
From everywhere.
Yeah.
And they started deleting all these comments. Mm-hmm. They deleted thousands
They're
of comments.
They're deleting groups of people who are reaching out to find others just to fight. Like, imagine, Avi, you get your vaccine or whatever you want to call it in your own mind, and you think you're doing a good thing, and now you're protected. You know, that's what most people think, I think. And then all of a sudden you feel shittier than you've ever felt in your life. Like you're sure you're going to die. That's how I've heard a lot of people describe it. I've heard a lot of people describe weird electrical stuff, not being able to move, and thinking, this is it, I'm going to die. Imagine you get through that and you're like, man, I got to figure out what happened, or if this is happening to other people. That's the investigative part.
Right.
So you go to the social media platforms and you're like, hey, has anyone else had this? And you find 20,000 people who are saying, oh my God, I did too. And then all of a sudden you have this relief and you have someone to share and maybe you can even get help from.
Right.
And then it's deleted. That's just absolutely abhorrent to me.
Unbelievable.
Because it takes so much effort and it's like the will to live, to seek help and to find a solution in such a shitty situation, because you have to admit to yourself at that point, I've been duped.
Yeah.
And that's not
and
easy.
And I injected myself
with something. It's not poisonous. Easy to admit. Buyer's remorse is like a huge thing right now. And I get it. I understand. I'm never going to judge anyone, really. And that's another thing that's really important to mention. Nobody on the... I don't know what to call the people who are speaking up, but nobody who is speaking up, I'll say, would ever, ever, ever reject someone who's on the fence or who wants to come over or whatever you want to say. Never. So there should be no hesitancy on that front from anyone for thinking we're going to shame you or whatever. That's not going to happen.
No.
It's not going to happen. No.
These people are not the enemy. And
they're the victims. Most,
they're victims. And they're, like you said, they were duped. And many of the people around me didn't even take it to, because they were afraid of the virus, of the coronavirus. They just took it to get by because they were threatened to lose their job. Many people were threatened to lose their job. They were threatened, you know, the atmosphere was, if you don't get it, you're the public enemy number one. You're going to get called anti-vaxxers, anti-corona deniers, science deniers, anti-science. It's quite amazing. Anti-science, me, you, anti-science. It's ridiculous if you think about it. And just words that were being thrown into the media again and again, and people just got it, brainwashed by it, and look what's happened. Google, which is YouTube, of course, realizing how they mess up with information. You know, if you try to find something about COVID, you might find it on like the 7th or 8th
page. I know.
They're just, you know. And
they're scrubbing stuff too, you know.
Everything, you know, amazing. And everything
and
in the first
definitions.
Page, definitely. Everything in the first page is fact checkers. Saying why the stuff that you're looking at is actually not true.
Like, oh, really? No. Okay, let's scroll down.
Unbelievable. A little bit more about the censorship. You had a paper that you wrote with Peter McCullough, which is, you want to talk about Peter McCullough and just people know who he is. He's a very cited doctor and famous. And
he is one of the most published people in his field. He has, I think, 60-something publications on COVID. He is a pistol. The man is tireless. He's an advocate for patient safety, patient-doctor relationship. He's absolutely an impeccable human being. These are the people that I would feel absolutely confident putting my life in their hands to help me if I needed medical care. These are the best of the best. They're the ones who care about their patients. They always have, they always will. They're putting them first. That's why they're being tortured right now.
Of course.
So Peter and I co-wrote a paper on myocarditis. It was just a non-controversial descriptive analysis of myocarditis reports from VAERS. I penned it, he put the cardiology in, we put it together, we submitted it. And it got accepted. It was peer-reviewed, immortalized, on PubMed. And then without any knowledge of us, like we didn't know, one morning we connected to each other via some app and said, hey, did you get a message from someone telling us that our paper had been temporarily withdrawn? I was like, what? Nobody knew what was going on. So I'm the corresponding author. So I wrote to the to Elsevier. We got a reply from the publisher that said, we are reconsidering publishing your paper in Elsevier because it wasn't an invited paper to the journal. And Peter responded immediately because he knows all this stuff. He's been doing this for a long time. And he said, no, that's not true. Here are these examples of that weren't invited papers that you published. Reinstate the paper now, or we're going to sue. Because we'd already paid all our fees. We pay extra for color figures, and we signed a contract. So, we waited a week. We didn't hear anything. Peter was like, be patient, Jess. I'm not patient. So I really needed him as a friend, you know, to be like, It's okay. We'll hear from them soon. He's really, really kind person, by the way.
I've seen him. It seems
but
like
he
it,
really
yeah.
is. Like, he's not just
you
doing
can't
something.
Fake that.
No.
Yeah.
He's very, very kind. He's a good friend. And so he eventually, you know, we got an email a week later and they said, we've decided not to publish your paper. And the reason we've decided that we're giving you, that we're not going to publish your paper, is that we don't have to. So it's written in their... I know,
that's
I know.
The reason.
Yeah, yeah. It's written in their words that at any point during the publishing thing procedure, they can decide not to. That was the reason. It wasn't based on the content. It wasn't based on anything we did wrong. It was just...
Just because we just can. Just because we can.
This is the reason we came up with...
Just because we can seem to be a reoccurring answer that you get from everywhere.
Yeah, can you though? That's my question to them. Can you? We'll just see about that.
Well, that's amazing.
Yep.
So you got censored from that? You just got censored
still
from...
Up. Still has withdrawn. And when you click on the link, you get just withdrawn across the title.
Oh. But I want to hear your opinion on what do you think is going to happen next? Just a guess, of course. You know, it's not a medical, it's not a science opinion. It's just you, Jessica. What do you think, where do you think all of this is going now?
I think there will be people thrown under the bus. So there will be the appearance of people being punished. Two things are going to happen. And I think it's a race. I'm pretty damn sure there's no way that they're going to be able to hide the bodies. That's what I'm calling it. For much longer, because you can't. There's too many.
Too many.
It's a mound. It's growing. Not even the legacy media will be able to hold on.
Or the social media.
Well, social media is going to come over much more easily than the legacy, but someone's going to flip. That's what I think. Most of my colleagues think that I'm not right about that, but I'm holding on to the hope. The other thing that's going to happen is this, the digitization thing is going to steamroll ahead. It's steamrolling ahead while we're talking right now. Canada is like way in the foreground on this.
Right.
That's what this has all been about in the first place to me, the digitization of the human.
And biotech also promoting that thing, which is connected because...
Yeah, yeah, it's the segue to the social credit score and the digitization. So that's what this is all about.
You think that will succeed or the uprising against it will succeed? I mean, just your guess. What do you think? Who's going to...
I don't know yet because I still am not sure of my calculated damage assessment on the people. If we're seeing a true disaster with regard to human fertility, that's going to cause a lot of problems. I don't know how bad it's going to be. There are a lot of people who are smarter than me saying that it's going to be really bad and it's going to happen soon. I can't ignore what they're saying. And so, yeah, I don't know.
But we are facing a different world right now.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately and morbidly, I think if that happens, if the destruction happens sooner than later, then it's way better. Because then it might actually throw a wrench in their
plan. Plans,
yeah. And it is a plan. It's horrible. It's a double-edged sword, right? But I guess final outcomes, we can hope for the best.
And keep getting the message out as...
Oh, that's the most important thing. Like talk. Yeah. Because so many stupid things are being normalized. They tried to erase, they're still trying to erase the concept of the immune system itself. And I mean, the fact that anyone would subscribe to being vaccinated or inoculated without understanding how the immune system works in the first place is kind of beyond me. It's like, if we never got a vaccine ever again, you'd be fine. Your immune system is fully functioning, it's optimized. If you have, if you're not vitamin D deficient, et cetera, et cetera. It works. We would be dead if it didn't work. Nobody understands what herd immunity is. I mean, these are the keywords that they threw out here. And we have to achieve herd immunity. Yes, can you explain what that is to me? No. So they're changing everything. They're changing definitions. They're normalizing myocarditis being, nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
They're putting it on bus, things saying, hey, if your kid has a heart attack, we have this medicine for you. But and just, this is normal.
Just a normal thing.
So what we have to do is talk twice as loud about how that's not normal and remind people. Because people have just forgotten.
How it was.
Exactly. Just not long ago. Yeah. remind people, let's go back to the 80s, because that's a great decade. We were all, you know, pretty happy in the 80s, I think. I grew up in the 80s. I think very fondly of it. You know, we didn't have phones. We didn't have, like, these you know, cell phones and devices running our lives. And, you know, we rode bikes and played and got dirty and mm-hmm. and got sick every time, you know, yeah. someone, you know, whatever. It was.
And recovered?
Of course we did. So, yeah, we have to remind people, I think. That's the best way to put it. Because I can tell everyone from the bottom of my heart, there's nothing to be a worry about with regards to, well, no, let me put it this way. I haven't worried one day since I started feeling that there was nothing to worry about with this particular coronavirus. I haven't worried one day. If I get it, I will be fine. Because I will, you know, do this, this, and this.
Can I ask you, did you get it?
I don't know.
You don't know if...
I don't care. I probably did, but I don't know.
I was... I went... That's the only time I think I was tested.
How did you feel?
The first night was weird. It was the Omicron, probably. That's the area...
So it was, like, recent?
Yeah, it was January. Last January. First night was weird.
Describe dirt. Weird.
Okay,
different from how you felt before and within
a bit, yes, but it, you know, it was a low fever, kind of 38 something Celsius. There was a feeling to it that was different from any other thing that I ever felt before. But it went away really quickly, and I'm not vaccinated, not injected at all. You know, maybe 2 days of mild fever, a week of cough.
Dry cough.
Yeah. I did get, I took a lot of vitamins, you know, vitamin D, C, whatever. I don't remember the whole thing, but, and it went away and that's it. And most people that I know.
And now you're immune for life.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe.
You are.
Yeah, okay.
You are. I'm telling you.
Okay.
It's robust and long lasting. Yeah, all the studies show now that multiply injected people have a high frequency of getting COVID. If they didn't already have it, it's weird because apparently they're getting it again.
Yep.
The bottom line is there's immune system compromisation, and it seems to be because of the injections. We don't exactly know how or why yet, but it's so ironic because, oh my gosh, I mean... The number one reported adverse event in VAERS right now, guess what it is?
Myocarditis.
COVID-19. I kid you not. It's not a joke.
Wow. They call it an adverse effect?
Yes.
Event?
It's reported as COVID-19.
Wow.
Or a SARS-CoV-2 positive test. Or both. Yeah. Think about that. Think about that. If people just knew that, and they still had some logical processes functioning, they'd say, well, if I'm going to get COVID anyway, why am I going to get injected? Because some people are saying that they're not so good for some people. So I'd rather just take my chances with COVID.
What doctors are saying, you know, from the wards, they're interviewing and saying everyone here is fully vaccinated.
I mean, who are you going to listen to if you're not going to listen to the doctors in the ICU seeing the patients? It's from the horse's mouth.
They're listening to the media, unfortunately. Dr. Rose. I'm so, not Jessica.
Call me Jess.
I'm so Jess. Yeah, I'm so happy that we finally did this.
Yeah, right? Gosh, took a long time.
It is. And I insisted that it would be, you know, face-to-face and not another Zoom.
You did, and I'm glad you did.
Yes, it's nicer.
It is. And it's important because it's also part of the message. Like, people, you know... Ugh, gosh, my life is on Zoom now. It's okay because, you know, it's the world and people live in different places. So you have to do it by Zoom. But when you can interact and bond and hug and love, do it. There's nothing to worry about. I promise you. We have treatment protocols that work. This is really important for me to throw in here. There are books written on effective early treatment regimens if you're worried about the effects of COVID or SARS when you get it. They work. You can talk to a doctor, maybe not your doctor, you might have to find a new one about what's best for you. But ultimately, like even before you get to the pre-treatment, keep your vitamin D levels optimal. You can get it from the sun, you can get it from supplementation, eat good food, drink clean water as best you can, exercise, vitamin C, because, and zinc, if your immune system, if your body is healthy, the functioning machine that it is, you will have an easy time with any viral pathogen, right, pathogen of this type that you encounter. We got to remember, like, what it was like.
Yep.
Maybe not go back to our old ways, but maybe make something better because, I mean, how many mixed blessings have we, I should say this too, right? How many mixed blessings have we had here? Like, this corruption that's being exposed out the yin yang now has always been there. Yeah. Really has.
And it's, we woke new up and just saw it, yeah, in front of us.
It's like, this is happening. It's really hard to, for us to believe and accept, but you cannot deny facts. And once you've seen this document, that document, or heard that person say this, or seen that person do that, you can't renege on the truth. You can't. You have to follow through, as hard as it is. So it's opened a lot of minds. It's opened a lot of doors to opportunities. As destructive as this is, there's still so much room for construction. And I think the communities that will be constructed in the aftermath will be incredible. I hope.
That's so important. An optimistic message that, you know, that we can come up from this a better world. And
it's the
aware.
Only outcome for me. Sorry, don't think anything else.
Amazing.
Even if I die, it's fine. It's like the outcome is going to be better in the end. Right. You know, I hope to be a part of it, but you know what I mean? It's like, that's another, I'm sorry, I have to say one more thing.
Sure.
The obsession with being afraid of death is such an important part of this. People have been put into this state of fear, which basically means they're hypnotized and you can command them to do whatever
the
you want.
The ultimate fear.
The ultimate fear. You're going to die. You're going to die. The air is toxic. Yeah. Basically, that's what they're doing to people. And they think, here, put this on your face. Now the air is not toxic. Fear is an illusion. Because I think, I'm not sure I completely understand what that means, but I think I do. And if it's true, it literally means that there's no thing to fear. There's nothing to fear. And that it actually is an illusion. And once you like get that into your body, there's nowhere, there's nothing to do but grow after that.
Yeah.
Almost impossible, but just try. I'm trying too.
Me too. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.